Welcome to Mark's Mess versus the Evolutionary War, the 12-issue limited podcast. Each episode I will be looking at one of the Marvel 1988 annuals with the banner of the Evolutionary War. I will examine both the main story and the backup, and in the 12th and final podcast I will look at the High Evolutionary story, which runs at the end of nearly all the annuals. This is episode 6 and we'll be looking at Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 22. That's right folks, we've gone to some Spider-Man and it's amazing. If you want to email me at my Gmail account, mymarksmess@gmail.com. Email this week from Thomas Raymond. He asks me, why are you so interested in this era of Marvel Comics? What's so special about it? When I first started into comic books, this is exactly where I started up. One of the first comic books I've kept was the start of the Evolutionary War, the X-Factor comic. And this is kind of at my zero point for comic books. So everything after that, up until a few years later, where I sort of pulled back in my comic book collecting, I knew. So this is kind of where home is for me. These are the characters I understand. These are the characters. So Spider-Man for me was married before I even got there. And there are other things that are missing. The fact that I've never really read any Spider-Woman. That's the original Spider-Woman. And my Spider-Woman is in a black costume and has blonde hair. Also, Power Man and Iron Fist. I never actually knew they existed until they turned up in the first of the new Avengers series way back when. And I didn't know who Power Man was. I'd heard of him as a joke character saying, "Sweet Christmas!" and all that jive talk. Yes, I don't have much of a ghetto mindset. So this is a fantastic era for me, why I like the Evolutionary War so much, despite the quality of some of the comics. Let's get into this episode's comic, Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 22. On the front cover, you've got three heroes. First of all, you've got Spider-Man swinging in from a tall building. Then, to the right, you have Daredevil standing at the top of a building with, I don't know, spider-sense? I don't know, something coming out of his head. In the centre, we've got a new hero. It's Speedball! Guest starring Daredevil, the man without fear, move over Spidey, enter Speedball, the masked marvel. And as we open up the comic book... oh, this should be such a good comic. It's by Tom DeFalco. Who not only is the editor, but he wrote a lot of Spider-Man at this time, and New Warriors, which Speedball eventually came into, Thor, I loved his Eric Masterson run on Thor, and of course, if you don't know Spider-Girl, go out there and get yourself some Spider-Girl, the little comic that could. It was a comic book that came out of, came out of What If, a sort of alternative history of Marvel Comics, where what if Spider-Man and Mary Jane had a child? And then it came into a series of 6, then 12, then it just kept on going. And it was really quite good. I really enjoyed it. It's told by David Michelinie, who wrote Spider-Man, Avengers, Iron Man. Photos by Mark Bagley and Mike Esposito. Mark Bagley, he was a 1983 Marvel tryout winner, and he went on to little things like New Warriors, various Avengers titles, but also Ultimate Spider-Man. He was one of the longest running artists on any of the comics. Mike Esposito, apart from being hard for me to pronounce, worked on almost every comic around. Now these are some great creators, so it should be a great comic. Let's look into it. Page 1, Chapter 1. Daily Bugle headline declares drug war. Daily Bugle here is 30 cents. Thursday, May the 26th, 1988. There's a drought in the amount of drugs in New York due to the Punisher annual, if you remember that far back, where the Punisher stopped a whole lot of drugs coming to America. And a gang is hiding out in a warehouse where someone speaks from above. It's the Amazing Spider-Man fighting the gang, tying them all up with his usual wit and self-charm. Then, on the way out, after tying them up, he tells a cop to check out the warehouse at the end of Pier 7, where you will find a surprise. And then he returns home to his wife, Mary Jane. Meanwhile, Madeline Naylor and her son Robbie Baldwin are in the city to see a play. A man runs by Robbie, and Robbie panics. By the looks of the art, the man is black, and Robbie looks like he's racist. Oh no, watch out, I don't want him to knock into me. We find out later on that is not the case. At the warehouse, the door creaks open, and a gangster with a huge scar on his face decides the tied up men and drugs are a gift he can't ignore. And when Peter Parker gets home to his warmed up wife, she shows him the newsflash saying that Spidey killed the man in the warehouse. Chapter 2. Daily Bugle headline. It's Friday, May the 27th, 1988. Spider-Man Slayer. At a paralegal clinic in Hell's Kitchen, which is part of New York, Matt Murdock is reading the Bugle about Spider-Man, but he's reading with his fingers. He's not only a blind lawyer, but the daredevil. He's determined to find out what really happened. And in his shadow, you see the shadow of who he really is, Daredevil. Meanwhile, back at the Daily Bugle building, crime reporter Ben Urich. I do like Ben Urich. I know mainly from Spider-Man comics, but I know he played an awful lot in Daredevil comics as well. Anyway, he's one of the staffers, one of the main reporters that you do meet from the Daily Bugle. He's given Peter Parker the scoop on the Spider-Man killer story. Police are convinced of his guilt. The public is divided. Something has to be done about the drugs war, but they're not too sure that vigilantism is the way. J.J. Jameson, the publisher of the Daily Bugle, congratulates Peter Parker for giving in to the Bugle the photos that show Spidey to be the menace he always knew he was. This gets tedious. This whole thing that Spider-Man is a menace, and it's went on for years and years and years, and still goes on today to a certain extent. It does get tedious. It makes Jonah out to be a real jerk. And some of the better writers make Jonah out to be actually quite a hero and delve into reasons why he doesn't like Spider-Man. But it gets a wee bit silly after a while. Anyway, J. Jonah Jameson rewards Peter Parker for his photo with a cigar. Meanwhile, Wilson Fisk, aka the Kingpin of Crime, tells his lieutenants about the mysterious warriors who destroyed the drug supplies in South America, seen in the Punisher annual. He wants none of those shenanigans in his city, and he's sure to have his way. Okay, Chapter 3, Police Mount, Daily Bugle, Police Mount Spider Hunt. There's no date on the page, but Spidey is checking out a warehouse where the druggies were murdered, and Daredevil is waiting for him. They have a standoff where Daredevil checks out Spidey's, whether he's lying or not, using his senses about his heart rate and stuff like that, and Daredevil believes Spidey is innocent. Meanwhile, back at the theatre district, at the end of the showing of Les Miserables, Madeline and Robbie, remember them, leave the theatre. The mum wants to go to the cast party, but the son is tired and a bit of a wimp. Who doesn't want to go to a cast party? Those things are legendary. Maddie meets up with an old acting buddy and leaves Robbie to walk back to the hotel alone at night in New York City in the 80s. Does anybody have the number of social services there? And don't forget, Robbie is still a high school student. Meanwhile, at the Daily Bugle, I don't know about you, but I'm getting a bit dizzy here moving from scene to scene. Anyway, J. Jonah Jameson finds out that the warehouse killings are making Spider-Man more popular, so he vows to prove Spider-Man innocent. Elsewhere, Robbie is walking back to the hotel in deep thought. He wonders if he should tell his mum about the accident. presumably the accident that turned him into Speedball, when he is jumped upon by some multi-ethnical thugs. He hits his head off the ground, smiles, and transformed into Speedball! Oh, good grief. His costume is blue with yellow circles, socks and gloves, belt and eye mask. We learn he cannot control the Speedball effect and proceeds to randomly bounce into every gang member. His powers seem to be based on bouncing about. He's basically, I don't know, a toddler on Smarties. After bouncing up the wall, he stops his momentum by grabbing the wall and settles on the roof. He then witnesses two of the Eliminators, which are the High Evolutionaries' goons, who are there to eliminate the gang. Speedball decides he should just watch. He decides to follow the Eliminators to get proof so that he can go to the police. Oh, good grief. Teenagers, let alone in New York City, and this is what happens. Anyway, chapter 4, Daily Bugle headline, Spider-Man continues rampage. Let's see, Saturday, May the 29th, 1988. Isn't this a bit, have we missed out a day? Let's see. Well, let's go back. Let's see, first day is Thursday the 26th, Friday the 27th, Saturday the 29th. We've missed a day! Or is this weird? If you're going to put the dates in, get them right. Anyway, the paper is in the garbage outside Juicy's Grill Bar. Spider-Man and Daredevil shake up the clientele in the Lower East Side to get information. Meanwhile, the Kingpin's HQ, the Kingpin gets an update on the Spider-Man and Daredevil looking for information. He then goes and interrogates one of the High Evolutionaries' purifiers who was captured. Kingpin crushes the purifier's bones until he faints, and the Kingpin says he will talk when he regains consciousness. Oh, good grief. In a loft in the 42nd Street, a purifier is reporting via a big TV screen. I mean, talking about, this is huge. 60 inches? I don't know. Anyway, he reports to the High Evolutionary about Operation Big Sleep. Again, they must have run out of operation names. Operation Big Sleep. Sounds like me trying to get the kids down at night. They will put everyone in the city unconscious and then proceed to sterilize all with unacceptable DNA via transmitter on top of the Empire State Building. Robbie, as Speedball, is spying on them. The Speedball effect wears off and he goes to call the police, who do not believe him. I think this is a comic book. Kingpin, meanwhile, finishes interrogating and killing the Eliminator, and has the Ranger, who's one of his henchmen, who arranges things. I bet his parents were very pleased at choosing that name. Get information to Spider-Man and Daredevil in a subtle way. While Spider-Man and Daredevil have another bar fight, one of the men tells them all they need to know, that the people responsible are on the top of the Empire State Building. They don't question the information, the fact that they've been going about this for hours, that two more editions of the Daily Bugle have been published since they started looking, and just suddenly now they get it, because we have Chapter 5, New Evidence, Spider-Man, Slay, something, and a whole lot of words I can't be bothered reading. Robbie makes his way to the top of the Empire State Building, as Robbie, not as Speedball. The purifiers are watching an enormous clock. I mean, this thing is huge, waiting for the countdown. It's like they really don't want to miss this. No, forget about setting your watch to beep. This is a huge, I don't know what, 12-foot clock in the middle of the room. Yike. It's as if they stole, I don't know, Big Ben and stuck it in the living room. Anyway, they're waiting for midnight for the time that they will start their work and put everyone into Operation Sleepy Pie. When Spider-Man and Daredevil jump through the window, the Heart of Heroes realise that it's a setup and decide to break the equipment because they do not seem to be up to any good. Instead of trying to work out the equipment, look for something. I'm telling you, if you're going to have a huge 12-foot clock counting down, surely you're going to have something that's labelled abort or stop or power off. Oh, good grief. Robbie is outside and sees the transmitter up in the mast. He turns into Speedball and tries to bounce up to the transmitter but cannot control his powers very well. Inside, Spidey realizes they're unable to stop the equipment, and outside, Speedball eventually breaks the transmitter but finds himself falling to his doom. But just at the last minute, some webbing catches him in the back and pulls him up to the roof without any serious neck injuries. He meets Spider-Man and Daredevil and explains he's one of the good guys. Meanwhile, the Kingpin gets an update on the past couple of pages from the Ranger and arranges one last thing. Split-Face Flanagan. That's the guy who actually did the killing of the people in the warehouse that Spidey left. You remember, it's way back at the start of the story. He is told by the Ranger that either he confesses to the killing or he will be killed. Chapter 6. Daily Bugle, Spider-Man Innocent, Flanagan Blabs. Oh yes, there's also a nice picture of a mug on top of the paper with half a Superman symbol on it. Spidey is off the hook, and at the Bugle, J.J. Jameson is angry about Spidey getting let off. Peter is very happy and nearly bumps into Robbie while he and his mother are meeting the Bugle's theatre critic, Mr. Cooper. Spidey and Robbie don't recognise each other outside of their costumes. I mean, they are dressed, but they're just not in their superhero costumes, you know. Anyway, the Kingpin worries about the things he has learnt from the Purifier. And he says, I'm beginning to worry. And for good reason, the Evolutionary War continues. Okay, that was just intense. It was a lot of moving about from one thing to another. I've blamed a lot of this, these annuals not being good, on things being brought down from the editor, must do this, must do that. Which is a shame, because Tom DeFalco, who was one of the plotters, is also the editor. It should have been better. With all the talent that they had in this, it should have been a lot better, but there was just too much moving about. It didn't really matter that Speedball was in it. They could have done it without him and gone to more depth with Spider-Man and Daredevil. There was nothing in that that made me feel, oh, we should really get into it, and I want to know more about these two characters, how they relate to each other, but no, none of that. The art was good. Just the story itself let it down. The next page, there is an ad for the newspaper strip with Spider-Man swinging away from J. Jonah Jameson, who shouts, you won't pay me to run that third-rate crummy comic strip, but explains that 500 newspapers across the country do it. So, and you can still find it on the internet somewhere, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, here's one that should be good. This is Speedball, created by Tom DeFalco and Steve Ditko. Yes, Steve Ditko in another Spider-Man comic after all these years. He Who Laughs. A plotter and penciler is Steve Ditko. If you don't know who Steve Ditko is, you don't really know your Spider-Man history. The co-creator of Spider-Man drew Amazing Spider-Man for 38 issues and was in various other comics as well, went into seclusion, doesn't really give interviews. In fact, not only doesn't really, doesn't at all. But in this year, a thing I didn't know was that he wrote a 10-issue comic of Speedball straight after this. Now, I only know Speedball from the New Warriors, where he's a bit of comic relief, and he was in an issue of Captain America, trying to join the Avengers as a junior member. Interesting that he did 10 issues of Speedball comic. I don't know if it sold very well. I've never heard of it, but I've been able to find evidence of it on the internet. A script by Roger Stern. He wrote a lot of Spider-Man, Avengers, West Coast Avengers Mini, where it started the West Coast Avengers run. And his famous Spider-Man one was The Kid Who Collected Spider-Mans. He also was involved with Death of Superman as, you know, a script writer, not as the person who killed Superman. Ink by Jackson Gintz, or someone like that, and editor Jim Salkrup. In a small off-Broadway theatre in Lower Manhattan, green-faced man gives exposition, wanting revenge on Madeline Naylor for stopping his acting career. Meanwhile, Maddie and Robbie are visiting that very deserted. The green-faced man grabs Robbie, puts him in the sack, and hoists him high in the air in a move that would not be out of place in a Scooby-Doo cartoon. All this behind Madeline's back without her knowing. He then laughs and waits behind the curtain for Maddie with a knife. Robbie is calm and starts to swing in the in the hanging bag. As Maddie enters the theatre, Robbie turns into Speedball and attacks the green-faced man before Mum notices. Robbie tries to find the green-faced man, but the green-faced man is hiding under the stage. In the art-wise, it doesn't show Speedball in his costume, but so it's actually really good art of just this figure with all these sort of circles, and I take them as sort of kinetic energy that's been built up. I don't know if they're to be seen or not, you know, like Marvel Girl's telekinetic power, whether you see it on the page but you don't know if it's actually visible to other characters in the comic book. But I thought it was a really cool image and visual of Speedball there. The green-faced man takes off his mask to reveal to be a green-faced masked man. As Robbie and his mum leave the theatre, Robbie does not tell his mum, as he does not want to explain his own power. The green-masked man follows them to the props and costume suppliers and sneaks in and bops the proprietor on the head. As Robbie looks round the shop for the green-masked man, he gets shoved down the disposal chute, but transformed into Speedball due to the fact that he's bouncing every which way to never against the walls of the chute, and fights the green-masked man while not letting his mum know what's happening. Think of the Stan Lee appearance in the Amazing Spider-Man movie, that he doesn't really know what's happening, and you get the idea. All this fighting in the background, and she keeps moving in the wrong direction at the wrong time. The green-masked man shows he is nuts by quoting Shakespeare, like that Klingon from Undiscovered Country, and Speedball defeats him by doing a lot of bouncing. The police notice that there's something wrong at the shop's closed door and go in to find the green-masked man, who attacks them with a knife, so they shoot him. Maddie protects her son and gives a moral to the story. Sally didn't mean that, Rob. When people lose touch with reality, we often look for something to blame. But the stage doesn't cause things like that. None of the arts do. I know that, Mam. That's like Uncle Norm blaming the Beatles for communism. You're one in a million, kiddo. Come on, let's go home. Yeah, somebody's just been killed and they're smiling and laughing away and making jokes about the Beatles. This is like 1988. Beatles have been disbanded for, heck, a long time. And squeezed into the very last panel, Robbie and his mum are at home, where their unseen dad, it's just a picture of the house with speech bubbles coming out of it, asks what the big city was like, and they say, "I saw amazing things, but I'm glad to we live in Springdale." And that's the end of that story. Oh, how I wanted to like this, but it was really a bit silly. It was a bit like a Scooby-Doo episode or a farce where the mother doesn't know anything. She's gone this whole annual not knowing what's happening, and she seems a bit ditzy letting her son walk home. The green-faced man isn't really, or the green-masked man isn't even named. The shop owner says, yes, he worked here before, can't remember his name, blah-de-blah. It reminded me too much of a 1963 comic rather than a 1988 comic, where it would have worked really well in place. It doesn't compel me to find out more about Speedball. It makes him out to be a bit foolish. I'd like to know where his powers come from, but I don't know if that's ever explained or what type of accident, because I don't know anybody he's got those comics. If you do have the Speedball comics, get in touch at mymarksmess@gmail.com and let me know what they were like, because I don't think I'm going to spend money trying to find them. The manual continues with two pages of Peter and Mary Jane's apartment at Bedford Towers. Back when the Parkers moved into the Bedford Towers, we had our very own Janet Jackson design their apartment, and here's what she came up with. So it shows you the floor plan and what the furniture looks like. Hey, what other comic book company would dare give you a pin-up of the hero's bathroom? Yeah. Okay. It's just, yeah, a bit weird. I don't know. The annual itself, really, you could miss it and not have anything missed. It doesn't really advance. I mean, the High Evolutionary's plan, let's sterilize everyone in New York City. Oh, and if they all had this device that could out everyone to Operation 1990, why didn't they use it in X Factor Annual against the Subterraneans? Make them all go to sleep instead of doing them one at a time. Oh, God, blimey. This is... I do hope next time that it's a lot better than this. Okay. Talking about next time, I think it does get better because it's one of my favourite comic books at the time. X-Men Annual, number 12. We'll be looking at that. At the end of each show, I highlight a podcast that's hopefully related to the comic that I covered this week. And this week, it's going to be Amazing Spider-Man Classics, an issue-by-issue history of The Amazing Spider-Man. This is actually unique because it's not actually on being produced anymore. They got to the first 40-odd issues and then they stopped, which was sad, but you understand when you commit to doing so many comics. I mean, I'm only doing 12 here and I'm still struggling. You get so many comics that it's hard to keep them up. But I'm so grateful to these guys for doing those first few dozen Amazing Spider-Mans. I loved this podcast. It was one of my favourite at the time. I found it funny, informative, and if you listen to a few and don't end up going, science! Every now and again when you see something ridiculously sciencey, like, I don't know, the High Evolutionary stuff, you haven't listened to them well enough. It's well worth a listen, so go along and listen to the trailer at the end of this and go to the website and find all those podcasts. This has been Mark's Mess versus the Evolutionary War, episode 6 of a 12-issue podcast. All characters are property of Marvel Comics, and thanks to Josh Woodward of joshwoodward.com for the title music. Next issue, the X-Men Annual number 12. It's you.
While attending a demonstration in radiology, student Peter Parker was bitten by a spider which had accidentally been exposed to radioactive rays. Through a miracle of science, Peter soon found that he had gained the arachnid's powers and had, in effect, become a human spider. Stan Lee presents...
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches seeds just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
Welcome to Amazing Spider-Man Classics, where every month I and some friends will be discussing every book, every guest appearance, and every cameo we can find of our favorite web-slinger, the Amazing Spider-Man. Are you tired of arguing over whether Ben Reilly should have taken over the webs? Do you grow weary of the brand new day with all its controversy? Then return with us to the early days. Return with us to the classics. Amazing Spider-Man Classics at Amazing Spider-Man.
.libsyn.com. To him, life is a great big pain. Wherever there's a hang up, you'll find the Spider-Man.